We continue our series, Following Jesus, and this morning we're looking at loving our neighbors. We are in Luke chapter 10, verses 25 through 37. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" Jesus replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart, and with all your soul, and with all your strength, and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." "You've answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this, and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "Who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus said, "A man was walking down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road when he saw the man. He passed by on the other side. So too, a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was, and when he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring oil and wine on him. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. Next day he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. 'Look after him,' he said, 'and when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have had.' Which of these three do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The attorney replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." May the Lord bless his word to our hearts and minds this morning. Well, as I said, we are doing this mini-series within the series Following Jesus, and we're looking at the three great loves. And of course, we looked at the greatest of love to start out the series. But it's hard when you look at this story, the story of the Good Samaritan and this lawyer going to Jesus, to not share an attorney joke. So here's a lawyer joke for today. Heard about this small town attorney who came to the witness stand, and there was this elderly grandmother-looking woman there with grayish white hair and glasses, and he went up to her and said, "Mrs. Jones, do you know me?" The elderly woman replied, "Well, yes, I do know you, Mr. Williams. I've known you since you were young. You're lazy, you're bigoted, you manipulate people and lie behind their backs, and you have a shoddy law practice." The attorney didn't know what to do. The courtroom erupted in laughter, and not knowing what to do, he said, "Well, Mrs. Jones, do you know the defense attorney?" She said, "Yes, I know Mr. Bradley as well. I used to babysit him when he was young, and frankly, he's grown up to be a big disappointment too. He's got a drinking problem, he's a bigot, and he's got one of the shoddiest law practices in the state. I know him." Well, the courtroom erupted in laughter again, and the judge rapped the gavel to get everybody's attention. He called the two attorneys forward, and he whispered, "If either of you ask her if she knows me, I'll jail you for contempt." Well, that's our lawyer joke for the day. But anyway, you know this parable of the Good Samaritan. It's one of the most famous stories that Jesus told, but it's also profound and practical. We've been talking about resetting our lives in this COVID crisis because a lot of us have either slowed down and are at home and thinking about how do we need to rebuild our lives after this threat wanes. Other folks' lives have sped up immensely. They may have been, they may be doctors or nurses and medical folks on the front lines, or perhaps police officers or firefighters, and they're serving extra duty with extra threat, and they're also at home teaching their kids and mentoring them, and then there's a principal, and they're the guidance counselor, and they're the lunch lady, and so there's extra things. But even amidst all that, I think all of us are rethinking what are the most important things in life. And so we're getting a chance to push the reset button on our lives and think, how do we build the foundation and the life that we would have and the Lord would have with us? And so we began this little mini-series with the great command, or the greatest love, on how Jesus, when this attorney comes to Jesus and asks him what's the most important life, and Jesus turns the question on the attorney and says, "How does it read to you?" We believe the attorney knew the Shema from Deuteronomy chapter 6, the prayer, "Hear, O Israel, Lord our God is one," and then the command there. And so he replies that way, love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your strength, and with all your mind. And we believe he was listening to Jesus because Jesus adds something very important at the end. Love your neighbor as yourself. And Jesus looks at him and says, you've answered correctly. Do this and you will live. And we've talked about how that empowers our vertical relationship as well as our horizontal relationship, how that God loves us and enables through God's agape love to us, for us to receive God's love and to learn to love ourselves as well as God. Many of us have wounds from our past or even the present, so that love is a healing love. And then there is that horizontal relationship where we learn to love our neighbors because of the power of that love. And so last week, as we begin to sort of flesh this out, we talked about loving our children and loving the children of the world as we sort of move the boundaries beyond that. And this morning, we look at loving our neighbor. And as Jesus said, do this and you will live. There's an edge to that, isn't there? You know, you've answered correctly. A lot of us have the right answer, but then living it out is a far bigger challenge. And so the lawyer might have felt the edge to that, right? Or felt just a twinge of guilt, perhaps, that he didn't live up to it, as many of us don't. And so he says, well, who is my neighbor? Now, that's a great question, not just for attorney, for all of us, I think, right? Because if we can draw a line, a box, a square, put a fence around who is our neighbor and who isn't, then we don't have to treat those other folks like our neighbor. But Jesus seems to pull up the fence and to break the box and the mold with this story of the Good Samaritan. And you know it, but just to walk through it for a moment as we rethink about that and lean into the story. The story is told of this man who is on a journey from Jerusalem to Jericho along this road that is still there to this day. We know it was one of the most dangerous roads to take. It's in fact known as the Way of the Blood. It went from Jerusalem, which is 2,100 feet above sea level, to Jericho, which is 850 feet below sea level, and so 17 miles. It winds through the deserts and cliffs and sheer drop-offs, and it is steep, and it is tiring, and it's also dangerous. It's dangerous because that's where a lot of robbers would hide and would attack people along the way. And so it is with this person. As they're traveling along this way alone, robbers, we're told, come upon the man, beat him up, take his money, and leave him half dead along the side of the road. And then we walk through the responses of different people, which I think really are a lot like our own responses sometimes, even in a different setting. And so the priest comes along, and we think to ourselves, well, it's a priest. It's a person of God. They'll stop, but instead the priest goes by on the other side of the road. And I think that's the first response. And let's call it cocooning, right? So cocooning means that we just keep our distance. And I think that's the way with a lot of us. And cocooning is kind of easy, isn't it? Not just for someone along the road, but today we have our TVs. And we look at the news, and we look at the newspapers and all the rest of the media and social media, and we see all these tragedies. And it's as if our heart becomes sort of glazed over. Our hearts become hardened, and we just walk by on the other side of the road. We switch the channel. We do whatever we want to do, and we just forget about the problems of the world. And I do think that's the natural response for so many of us. So the priests pass by on the other side of the road. And then the next response is a Levite who is an upstanding religious person, probably a business person in the community, well-respected, and we're told that he looks over and sees the person and then also passes by on the other side of the road. And I think that response is curious but uncaring. Curious but uninvolved. And we know that feeling, that moment, don't we? I mean, how many of us have gone down the road on a trip and we see an accident and the traffic slows down because everybody's looking over there? But sometimes you need someone to stop. Now, everybody can't stop. I understand that. And sometimes we just foist that responsibility onto others. But we do need some people to stop. And so it's curious but uninvolved. And so it goes by on the other side of the road. And then we see movement on the horizon, and our hopes sort of rise, but then they're dashed because it's a Samaritan. And we have to remember that in that time, in that culture, there's tremendous racial and religious differences between Jews and Samaritans. And so that battle continues and that conflict continues even to this day. In fact, the enmity was so strong that many Jews would just feel that the only good Samaritan was a dead Samaritan. And so we wouldn't hope for the Samaritan to stop and help a Jew who is half-beaten and left beside the road. But our hopes are changed when all of a sudden that Samaritan stops and he begins to care for that person. And I think that's the last attitude there, to get close enough to care for all of us. And so he takes some wine, which would have been an antiseptic at that time, uses some oil, which would have soothed the pain and helped the person from the tremendous sun beating down on them, and begins to care for them, and then puts them on their donkey, takes them to an inn, which may have been quite a ways. It may have been almost all the way to Jericho, and takes care of them that night in the inn, and then in the morning he leaves money to pay for the next few days to stay, and then tells the innkeeper that if there's any other expenses when he returns, that he will pay for the bill. And Jesus looks at the attorney and says, which was a neighbor to this man? And the attorney says, maybe not even willing to say Samaritan, says the one who showed mercy to the man. And Jesus says, go and do likewise. Well, I think this, as we look at that, lean into that story this morning, there's at least three characteristics that help us to know what it is to be a good neighbor. And the first is availability. To be available. I mean, sometimes just showing up isn't quite enough, but we need to show up. But we think of the person who was cocooned, and they were in their own world. And then we think of the Levite who just sort of looked over there and then passed by on the other side of the road. They were curious but uncaring. And then this Samaritan who was close enough to care. They were available. And how many times in our own life do we just feel emotionally unavailable, or maybe we're too busy in life? And I think one of the things about maybe this time period is we slowed down some. Now, there's an interesting experiment that was done at Princeton University by a sociologist by the name of John Darwin. And the experiment took place at Princeton Seminary. And so it's called the Good Samaritan Experiment, of all things. And so the setup was this. They gathered a number of seminarians studying for the ministry and asked them if they would be part of an experiment. And so what they told them was they had to go across campus and they had to deliver a 5-minute expository talk on the Good Samaritan story. And they said that there would be just one variable, and other than that, it was the same for everyone. And so the way it played out was they had someone waiting along the way, And that person would tell them whether they had plenty of time or not enough time, and then they had someone along the way who needed help. And so the seminarians who were going on their way and were told that the sessions were running behind, they had plenty of time, and then saw someone in need, 63% of them stopped and helped the person in need. But on the other hand, the seminarians who were stopped by someone and said, you're running late and you need to hurry, and then saw someone who needed help, only 10% of them gave help to that person who needed some help. Now, that's interesting because I think at the heart of the matter is that when we slow down and when we leave an unhurried life, we're able to help others who are in need. And I think maybe that's what availability is all about. And so many of us have our lives that are so crammed full of good things. You know, the priest was doing good things. No doubt the Levite was doing good things. But maybe the Samaritan knew the priorities in life and was running life at a little slower pace and could recognize someone who really needed his help. And I think all of us maybe in this COVID pandemic have maybe, hopefully, learned to slow down for the things that are most important in our life. And when we do, I think we can lean into this story and learn to be available to those who are in need. You know, it's amazing. I heard the other day that someone pointed out that Jesus is never have been recorded as running in Scripture. Jesus tended to lots of needs, but he never seemed to be in a hurry. The most he had was a stride. Even when someone's daughter was dying, we know that Jesus didn't go too fast because there was a woman with an issue of blood who could catch up with him. Jesus was never in a hurry. And if Jesus wasn't in a hurry, I'm just thinking that maybe we don't need to be in a hurry too. Maybe we need to slow down and learn to walk through our life and to love God and to serve God and to love and serve our neighbors. So to be available. The second thing is vulnerability. And that's something I think that we're thinking a lot about now, because I think we all feel a little bit vulnerable with this pandemic. I mean, if you're in a higher risk category or multiple risk category, you know what it is to be maybe vulnerable to something you can't even see. And so we're extra careful, but I think in all of our lives, we sort of know that we're vulnerable, but yet in some sense, vulnerability is always important. We can't love without vulnerability. Brené Brown is well known for as a social worker who's talked a lot about vulnerability and how to really have a deep relationship, we have to be vulnerable and trust the person enough to share our weaknesses as well as our strength. And we all want to put on a facade. We all want to be strong and we all want to be the person that rides above everything. But when we're vulnerable, we have a greater trust and are able to have a greater love. And so it is in this moment we think about this Samaritan. And he was willing to take a risk. It would have been true that this could have been a setup, right? I mean, the robbers could have left this person there half dead and then been lying in wait for the next person to stop and then also attack them. That had to go through the mind of that Samaritan, and yet they were willing to take a risk and make themselves vulnerable in order to help someone else. Now, I'm not saying to take risks that are needless, but in some sense, we need to know when to be vulnerable. And some of us sort of shield ourselves from the needs of others because we don't want to be taken for a dollar because we might be manipulated. And we want to be prudent, we want to be wise, we want to be good stewards, but we also need to share from the blessings that God has given us and to help our neighbor, just like this Samaritan. To be vulnerable, to be willing to put everything out there. There's a film director that I love by the name of Richard Curtis. And he's well known for the movie Four Weddings and a Funeral. He did the Mr. Bean series, and he's been in charge of the American Idol Give Back. But back when he was young, he visited Africa, and he went there to help with those who were in a drought in Ethiopia, and he was overwhelmed by the need that he saw there. And he felt like it could only do a little. He was fairly young, just getting going in his career. He was up-and-coming film director, comedy film director. But he decided then and there when he was in Africa that the rest of his life he was going to do everything that he could with his gifts and talents, which was being a film director, and then take that money and use it to help those who are in need. And he's done exactly that. He said, listen, I'm not sure sometimes about my faith. I'm not a theologian. I'm not a philosopher. But he says, I do understand the Sermon on the Mount, and I do understand the parable of the Good Samaritan. And with those two things, I know that I need to change my world. And so he said, I'm going to found this thing called Comic Relief. And you may see it once a year, everybody puts on kind of this red nose and different businesses. And he started an American Idol, did it too with this American Idol Gives Back. And he's raised millions of dollars for those who are in need in Africa. And I suppose people could look at it and say, you don't know that all that money is going to be raised and be used for the right thing. But he has to be able to say, I'm going to be vulnerable. I'm going to do everything that I can and give it to good, solid resources there that are going to make a difference in people's lives. One of the movies that's been out recently is Mr. Rogers, on the life of Mr. Rogers, who was a pastor and decided that his ministry was doing a children's show called Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And in that show, Mr. Rogers was always showing that people who are neighbors who are maybe outside the fence of our yard and that we could do something. But one of the things he always said was, always be looking for helpers. It was something he learned from his mother. But he always invited people to be helpers, and I think we need to be available and we need to be vulnerable if we're going to be helpers. And the last thing is solidarity. Now, I know that that sounds like a big word and sometimes mysterious, but solidarity just means that we stand with those who are in need, even though they may not be part of our immediate family. They may be across our country or around our world, but we're going to treat other people like they're our neighbors, like they're our sisters and brothers. We're going to have solidarity with them. In this moment, the Samaritan was of a different faith than this Jewish person, probably spoke a different dialect, certainly had racial tensions there as well, but he was willing to stand in solidarity with a person who wasn't of his race, who wasn't of his faith, and to do what needed to be done, to be a good neighbor and to show God's love. In so many ways today, we see our heroes, our COVID heroes, who are standing in solidarity. Maybe they're serving on the medical front lines, and they're putting themselves at risk and making themselves vulnerable, but they're serving and standing in solidarity with those in need. We see that with our, not just with our medical folks, but with our police and with our firefighters and other folks. And some folks who may be at home are sewing masks. We had some of our quilters that sewed masks for Grant's house for everybody, so they'd have a mask for every day of the week. And so they shared from that gift of quilting to make face masks for them and stood in solidarity with them. One of the people that was in the news at the beginning of all this and has sort of faded from the news but should not, I think, is a person by the name of Dr. Lee. You go back to the beginning of this pandemic, and I know there's lots of sort of accusations. Maybe we should have done something earlier in China or other places, but recall that Dr. Lee was the doctor in China who took video footage and put it on social media, even when he was told that he couldn't, and risked his own life to sound a warning shot, not only across his country, but around the world. And that's where we first learned of the danger of COVID-19. Now, he was punished for that. And in fact, he went on to continue to serve on the front lines, caught the disease himself, and died. But he was willing to put his life on the line so that you and I would be safer. Who knows that this thing might be 4 or 5 times worse than it is now had he not shared that footage on social media. He even shared the genetic sequence to help scientists to address this problem as early as possible. Well, we learned later that Dr. Lee had a young wife and a young child, and his wife was pregnant. And he was willing to continue to serve on the front line and give his life. But before he died, he wrote a beautiful poem that's on the internet. You can see that. But one of the things that he shared was that his faith was an important part of his life. And in his closing kind of letter, he shared, again, Paul's letter to Timothy that said, "I have run the race, I have fought the fight, and there is laid up for me a crown in heaven." He was willing to do everything that he could so that you and I could be safe. So in the middle of all the finger pointing, let's also point a finger at a doctor in China, Dr. Lee, who was willing to put his life on the line so that neighbors around the world would be safer. But in closing, I just want to think about a couple thoughts, which is that for all of us to be challenged to widen our view of who is our neighbor, like no doubt this attorney was, and to realize that we don't do it on our own. We do it through the source and power of God's love for us. But also to reflect for a moment about something that's often overlooked, which is Jesus is the ultimate Good Samaritan. All of us, in some sense, were left along the road, beaten and bruised and wounded in one way or another, feeling broken and in need. And Jesus came and was willing to risk his life to show us love and even lay down his life, to pay the price for all of us, to tend to our wounds, to care for us, to love us, and to offer his life on Calvary that we would know forgiveness and God's grace, to pay the bill, and then to say, if there's anything else, I'll take care of it when I come back. Jesus was the ultimate Good Samaritan and invites us into that as he sustains us in love. So I challenge us all to love in a greater way and to appreciate God's love for us. And close with this one last thought. There's a writer that I really like by the name of M.K. Asante. He grew up in South Philly. He's an African-American, a writer who's seen a lot of success. He's a great poet, a great novelist, also worked on this film, Motherland, and it's bigger than hip-hop and some of those things. But he writes, and one of the things that he said back in 2012 at NYE, back then the National Youth Event, was that if you make an observation, you have an obligation, which I like that. If you make an observation, you have an obligation. If you see something, you're automatically called into it. You're part of the story. You're not just cocooned. You're not just curious, but uninvolved. But we all need to get close enough to care, like the Samaritan. And he tells this one story, which I rather like, and it's set in South Philly. And it's about Miss Sally, who's an older African-American woman, and she's blind. And like a lot of folks who can't see, she has great wisdom, and so she has vision that some of us who can see don't have. And so we're told that as an elderly black woman in that neighborhood, that a lot of the teenagers like to prank on her. And so one day a group of teenage boys were walking down the street and they saw this bird lying on the sidewalk. And so they took the bird and they decided they'd prank on Miss Sally. And so they walked to Miss Sally's house and knocked on the door, and Miss Sally opened the door and the boys began to snicker, as teenagers sometimes do. And Miss Sally said, "Can I help you?" And the teenage boys, one of them spoke up and said, "Miss Sally, we have a bird that we found lying on the sidewalk in one of our hands, and we want you to tell us, is that little bird dead or alive?" Well, Miss Sally thought for a moment, and then with great wisdom, she said, "You know, I don't know whether that little bird is dead or alive, but I know this, it's in your hands. It's in your hands." You know, all of us sometimes have been cocooned and removed emotionally from situations that we'd rather just turn the channel on. Sometimes we've been curious and uninvolved, just not caring, even though we might look that way. But Jesus invites us into the kind of love that he had and the kind of love that God had, which is close enough to care, and then even more to do what it takes, because Jesus did everything that it took, even like that good Samaritan. And so for all of us, I know that none of us can do everything, but all of us can do something. None of us can do everything, but don't let that prevent you from doing something. We can all do something. And so I challenge us to be invited into Jesus' challenge that's not just to the lawyer, but also to all of us. Who was a neighbor to the man? The one who showed him mercy. Would you join me in prayer? Lord, as we are challenged today by this story that has touched people through the ages, help us, Lord, to not just keep it in our head, in our mind, and to be distant, to be cocooned and uninvolved. Not just curious, but Lord, help us to get close enough to the hurt in our world to care, to do what it takes to make a difference in our world, whether we're at home, whether we're traveling, whether we're at work or wherever we are. Help us to love like you do through your power and to your glory. And all God's people said, amen.